For members only. Golf Smarter number 447, published on July 29, 2014.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
The Frustrated Golfer's Handbook with Darren G.
This is Golf Smarter.
Welcome back to Golf Smarter for members only, Darren.
Aloha, Fred. How are you?
I'm fine and happy to hear aloha again.
I wish you were here in Hawaii with me. I could say it in person, but...
Well, that's two of us.
You're only 2,500 miles away, so it's a hop, skip, and a jump.
Hey, my four wood. I think that would be just sufficient, would be the four wood on that one. Yeah, no, yes, I would love to be there with you, and hopefully someday we will. I would always love to get a group of Golf Smarter listeners to meet me in Hawaii and do the academy with you, and then to go see, you know, we have other golf instructors there, and it would just be so much fun to just kind of bounce around taking lessons and playing golf together.
All right, let's plan on it.
All right, send your letters. Click on the Hey Fred button if you want to meet me in Hawaii, and we'll figure out a date sometimes in 2015. Maybe we'll do episode number 500. Ooh. Maybe we'll do episode number 500 in 2015.
Right here on the Big Island.
On the Big Island. That would be a trip. Awesome. Oh, wow. Okay, that's a great idea. Anyway.
That's a goal to shoot for.
Yeah, please. Okay, so folks, start writing to me now. Episode number 500 is going to be on August. We're now just about hit August. August 4th, 2015. It's on a Tuesday. We can record it. We can record it before then, but we'll publish it as number 500. And I would love to celebrate with you because it's my birthday. But I would love to celebrate that with you. So start writing to me and see if we can get a couple people interested in going to Hawaii together in next summer. Awesome. Great idea. Thank you, Darren, for the invitation.
You bet.
You know what you committed to, don't you?
I better put that on my calendar so I'm around. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll get Jim Waldron out there, too. So congratulations. You have a new book. We've featured the first two books in our Golfer Smart at golfsmarter.com, the seven personalities, the various seven personalities of golf, right? The first two.
Yep.
And now you have a new one, which after buzzing through it, and that's the best part about it, you can buzz through this book. It really does belong in every golfer's golf bag and in their bathroom. But, I'll tell you why. It's a lot of chapters. It's called The Frustrated Golfer's Handbook, which is perfect. And there's a lot of very short chapters and goes directly to the issue. And I was playing last week and I was really struggling. I was upset with myself. And then I got your book that night off of Amazon. And I opened it up and I saw the chapters and went, wait, that's my problem today. And so I read that chapter in, 35 seconds type thing. And then all of a sudden, the next two rounds, I was back to like, okay, all good again. Thank you, Darren. It was great. So give me your idea to talk about the book.
Well, the title, it kind of sums up the life of a golfer, the Frustrated Golfer's Handbook. And I think every golfer, whether you are the number one player in the world or you've just picked up a club for the very first time, experiences a bit of frustration with this game at some point.
Oh, and, how generous of you to say a bit.
I'm being very kind there. At some point, it might be from the very first swing or so. But, I thought to myself, and after working with thousands of golfers at the Golf Academy, in my Golf Academy here in Hawaii, I realized that there is a gap between what you know you're capable of doing and what you're actually doing. And so the key there is what you're capable of, because you've done it before, you've hit that shot, you know your body can do it, but you don't do it every time. So that gap is where the frustration lies. And usually that gap is caused not by the equipment or your actual swing. It's usually a mental thing, a mental error, something that's causing you to tighten up, something that's distracting you, something that's causing this turmoil within. And, you know, golf's a funny game. It's the one game where there's really no opponent that's trying to do anything to you in terms of guarding you or distracting you. It's really yourself. And so that's what was the impetus for writing this. And I thought, okay, I love books that explain a lot of detail. And but I also like books that can give you the quick fix, you know, something that you can look at and glance and, like you said, in 35 seconds or less, see what the you know, analyze your issue, say, yeah, that's what it is, and give you a solution. And that's what this is all about. So it's really designed, like you said, to, you know, flip through the table of contents, flip through a book. You can actually just kind of flip through the pages and go to one of the 50 mental golf tricks and see how it, you know, impacts your game. And again, it's for low handicappers, it's for pure beginners, and everyone in between.
And it's two sections, part one, part two. Each are 25 chapters. So it really, there's 50 different issues that you just look at it and go, yep, that's what I had a problem with. And go right to it and read it. And it's calming, it's helpful. It's direct. It's so direct and to the point. And you just sit there and go, oh.
And a lot of the things are, some of them are, it'll be like a big aha. It's like, oh, I never really thought about that, but that applies to me. And for some, it's just a really something you forget about, something that you take for granted. And you're like, oh yeah, that makes a whole lot of sense. And, I think that's what makes it so great is that, that's the feedback we're getting from people who've picked up the book and people that have come to the Golf Academy and have used a lot of the mental golf tricks. They say, you know, that one really just applied to me at that given moment when I was playing the round. Another say, yeah. And then another one was really helpful when I was in the club championship. So it really is about giving you all the different tools. And that's something that I talk a lot about with folks that I work with on their golf game, is that you want to have a bag of tricks, you know, a tool bag of tricks that you can just pull out when you need it. It's just like your tool bag at home. You know, sometimes you'll need one tool to do a certain thing and another one. And it's nice to have them all accessible. And that's what this is all about. And you mentioning that it's something you can throw in your golf bag. And that's why I called it a handbook. It's something that you know, hopefully by the time you grab the book, it's going to be all kind of tattered and worn because you've been using it constantly, and it's nice and light, and you can throw it right into your bag.
Well, it's even easier. I wanted to mend after I said it and started listening to you. I was like, no, you don't need to put it in your golf bag. Just put it on your phone.
That's right.
You know, it's downloadable. It's there's an ebook version of it. I have it on my phone, and now because of the Kindle app, I have it now on my iPad. I have it on my phone. And so, like the other day, as I was flipping through it, I went directly to chapter 43. I read the introduction, you know, find out more because I knew I wanted to talk to you again. But I was like, okay, how to finish in balance. I was having trouble that day, and right. I found myself, you know, falling away after my shots and just not being on my feet after I finished. So I went directly to that chapter. Okay, I read it. Now I want to hear it from you.
Yeah, so basically chapter 43 is about how to finish in balance. And it's a concept that I use that's helpful for a lot of things. And it's starting with the end in mind. And you've heard that before in a lot of different programs. Stephen Covey talked about it in the 7 Habits of Successful People, is that if you start in your mind with how you want to finish, that helps you actually get through the motion to get there. So what I tell people, instead of starting, you know, setting up to the ball, start with your finish. How would you finish a perfect swing? You'd be in balance. You'd be looking straight down the fairway at where your ball ends up. And so if you start with that in mind and then you actually do it, what it does is it sets a trigger of series of events that helps you create that. So if you start with that finish, then you start your backswing and then finish and go all the way through to the finish again, you'll find your balance in much, much better shape. And the way I look at it, if someone finishes their swing in balance, then they had the balance throughout the entire swing, and they probably struck the ball pretty darn well.
So when you're saying start with your finish, are you saying mentally a mental picture in your head, or as you're taking your warm-up swings, start out by being in a finish position and realize what you want to feel like there?
Well, it's both, actually. Hmm. So a lot of these exercises are equally powerful sitting at home reading about as actually doing. So I talk a lot about this with people, is the actual reading of the book and visualizing yourself doing it is almost as powerful as doing it itself. Okay, so this is a very strong concept to use. And you know, they've done a lot of tests. They've done it actually with a lot of Olympic athletes where they have them do their exercise and they hook them up to, you know, all the they read their brain, their heart rate and so forth, blood pressure. And when they're doing their actual activity or event, they measure all those different areas. And then they have them sit in a dark room, close their eyes, they hook them up again, and then they have them visualize doing that same event start to finish. And then when they match up the data, it's almost exactly the same. So there's power in just visualizing and reading it and doing it as equal, as powerful as doing it itself. So I say do both. And for a lot of folks, you know, you don't get to play golf year-round. You know, you're maybe in a winter area. Fortunately, here in Hawaii, we don't have winter, so that's quite nice. But so if you do live in a place where there is winter, come join us out here during your dark months. But you could just by visualizing doing this, it's equally powerful because it triggers the same types of feelings and muscle twinges, if you will, in your body. So that being said, if you are on the range or even at home, you know, take a club and get in that finished position, like you said, and feel that balance as if you just struck a perfect shot down the fairway. And then from that finished position, you can actually start your golf swing. So normally you would set up to the ball and start your golf swing, your backswing. From a finished position, you can start your backswing and then finish again and get in that same balanced position. It's equally powerful.
Awesome. Yeah.
Equally effective, yes.
Yeah. Well, and then the chapter before it, 42, is how to keep your balance.
Mm. Yeah, and so a lot of people, this whole full section here on balance, and, you know, there's a little subsection within these 50 in which I talk about how important balance is. And I think that is something that people take for granted in the game of golf. So a lot of people may have, you know, a beautiful swing. They, you know, they might have the right equipment that fits them and so forth. But if they're off center, even by a hair, that causes them to miss hit the ball. And as we know, golf is about hitting that sweet spot. So even if you're off by a fraction of an inch here and there, that's probably causing, you know, mishits and so forth. So we talk about being in balance and being centered throughout the golf swing. So number 42 talks about how do you do that? A lot of people are out there and you see them kind of swaying and moving in all different directions. One little trick that I like to do is there's a center of your body that right in the abdomen, right below the belly button. And if you've ever done any martial arts, they talk a lot about that area of your body right below your belly button. That's where your power emanates from. You talk to a boxer, that's where they actually punch from right there. And that is where you also can keep your center during the golf swing. So what I tell people is imagine a bungee cord connected from your belt buckle down to the tee or the area right below the ball. Now, with a bungee cord, it stretches, but it also keeps, you know, there's a little spring to it. So as you turn, you're still connected to that sweet, to that point where the ball is through the bungee cord. But hey, there's our friend.
Okay.
There's our mascot.
Yeah, right, exactly. That's the dog. That's my dog, Tita Green.
Tita Green.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
Yep. Well, I think your dog liked this one, so that was the gallery applauding. So yeah, so basically, what the bungee cord does is it keeps you centered, keeps you connected, keeps you balanced throughout the entire swing, even through your backswing and the follow through. So it's a very powerful tool because a lot of people say, "Well, how can I keep centered?" And if you if you're too rigid, if you say, oh, it's just like a, you know, a pole holding you, then you're not, you lose the flexibility. But the nice thing about a bungee cord, you can use that imagery of it's being flexible to, for you to make your turn, but also keeps you connected at the same time. It's a great tool to maintain balance. And again, the goal is strike that ball in the sweet spot.
You know,
and when you strike it there, then it goes where you want it to go.
I don't want to dispute you, but you said golf is about hitting the sweet spot. I think golf is more about recovering from your mistakes and your errors.
Well, know, it's funny.
Golf is a series of disasters. Like life, golf is just a series of disasters, and it's how about how you handle it. I mean, you talk about the mental game all the time. I mean, isn't it really how you handle it? Because you're going to have more... I mean, people at you know, players at my level and what, you know, like this that are amateurs and out for fun, I think it's more, we have more shots that we're frustrated over than that we're really happy about. But thankfully, there are four or five shots around, that, especially on the 18th hole always, that makes it go, okay, I want to come back. But the rest
that's
of
right.
The,
it only,
but the
it
rest
only
of the day
one.
Is well, is being a frustrated golfer.
Yeah, and I think that sums it up for any level. I mean, even, you know, the top guys on tour, when they go and they play a round, even when they play a great, great round, it's not 100% perfect. Oftentimes they'll say, you hear the interviews and from the guys and gals after a round, they'll say, you know, I struck the ball pretty well, but, you know, there's this area I can work on and that area that I can work on. And like you said, and the same goes for the weekend golfer. You might hit two or three really great shots, and the rest are not as, you know, not to your desire. So really, it's all about how you handle that. I agree with you 100%, Fred. It's about managing yourself around the golf course and recovering from each shot. And the way you do it is you just focus on one shot, that next shot. You can't dwell on the past too much. I tell people, learn from what you've done, the good and the bad, and unfortunately sometimes the ugly. But when you get to the next shot, it's a new, brand new beginning, and that one could be the best. So I kind of tell people, you got to blank the slate every time you step up to the next shot, and start fresh from there. And again, then you move on to the next one. So it's a series of really handling those different ups and downs of a round. And the people that can do that actually end up playing the best. It's funny, cause sometimes you'll go out and you'll get matched up with someone you don't know. And you know, you play a round of golf, and the really, really good players, you don't really notice them. You know, they hit a shot, and then if it's not a great shot, then they don't make a big fuss about it. And then they treat the next one and recover. But they're not always tee to green, hitting every fairway, every green, but it's how they handle themselves. And that is the major difference between, you know, playing to your potential and being frustrated, is that you handle those different situations and the adversity that you face, similar to like life. I agree with you on that one too, Fred.
So, do you mind if I just pick random chapters throughout the book, and we can get your take on each of these and why you
sure.
chose to put that in the book?
You bet.
Awesome. Okay. So then tell me first, what is it that separates part one from part two? What's the content difference that you decided you needed 25 chapters on this and 25 chapters on that?
Well, I think golfers look for ways to improve their game in many different ways. And you think about it, we spend part of our golfing time on the golf course, but we spend a lot of it on the range as well. So I divided it into two sections. One is what you could do while you're playing, because that's when you need it in the heat of battle, if you will. And what you can do to improve your game when you're not playing and you're off the golf course. And that includes actually, you know, being on the driving range, but also what you do in preparation other than being on the driving range. So one of the exercises I talk about is how can you play, you know, a great round of golf is before you even get up there. And I say, well, go to sleep. And people are like, what are you talking about? Well, the night before, before you play a round of golf, while you're going to sleep, just, you know, close your eyes and visualize yourself playing that round, that great round the next morning. And something that all great athletes do is they visualize themselves in the heat of battle, if you will, playing the great game, doing great, you know, making great shots, great passes, everything clicking, and they see where they want to be. So going to sleep is one of the exercises that you can do off the golf course and visualize yourself hitting great shot after great shot. And it actually sets the tone for the next morning.
Number 14.
Yeah, so that's how I divided it, on the golf course and off the golf course.
Okay. No, that makes sense. But then I want to say, you know, you talk about the visualization. Number 14 is how to visualize what you can't see. What does that mean? And what are you driving at here? I get it.
Well, this is in reference to reading green. So at my golf academy, a lot of folks come up and say, you know, I really have a hard time reading greens. I can't see the breaks. In fact, I just worked with a woman a week ago Tuesday, and she said, you know, I really don't see all the subtleties that are out here. And so what I teach people is that it really is all just a guessing game. So the people that read the greens, they're guessing as to how the ball might get from A to B, where the ball is now and into the hole. And so what I tell people is that even if you can't see, if you don't visualize a line, or if you're very good at it usually but you're not sure, you can trick yourself into actually creating a line. And so what I tell people is this, is like, if I was to give you, let's say, $1,000 to come up with a path that you think the ball will follow from A to B, A being where your ball is and B being the hole, I'll give you $1,000, and I just want you to, you know, take your putter and trace a line, you know, any line. What would you do? Okay, and just that little impetus of saying, you know, don't overread it. You're not trying to read a green to get the ball in the hole. Just draw a line. And literally, people will go up there who have no idea what it's going to do, and they draw a path, and they might draw a straight line or a curved line, depending on what they think it's going to do. That in their mind says, oh, I get it. Now there's a connection between where I am and where I want to be. And so that's what I tell people. If you can't see a line, fake it. Draw a line in your mind. And I often like to talk about, you know, it's, imagine if you had a marker, you could draw a line, or you had chalk and you could drop a chalk line from the ball to the hole. What would that look like? And just by doing that, that gives you the confidence to step up and hit that ball along that path. And even if, you know, you're great at reading greens and experienced at it, you know, nothing is saying that what you read is going to be a science, because the green's uneven, you know, the grass doesn't grow evenly, there's moisture, there's all these different things, there's, you know, sand, that specks of dust on there. So even if you hit the ball along your path, no guarantee it's going to go in the hole. But what it does is it sets a direction. It's sort of like when you get in a boat, you set your course. And when you're in a boat, you're on the ocean or on the lake, you know, you don't follow it exactly. If you look at the minute details of how a boat goes, it kind of zigzags. It's always making a little course correction along its path, but it has a goal to get from A to B. Otherwise, they would kind of move about randomly. So that's what you're trying to do here, set a path from where you are with your shot and where you want it to go. And then you see that, you draw that line, it provides you with a path, and then that's half the battle right there. And you step up and knock the ball along your path. And, you know, it doesn't go in every time. But if you can say with confidence that you had that goal in mind to get the ball in the hole, you saw that line or you drew that line and you went for it, then that's a good shot. And that's what that one's all about.
Okay.
It's really about how to do something that you're not necessarily confident about, you're not sure about. It puts confidence in your game right away.
Yeah, I'm sure you're familiar with the Aimpoint putting system, which we talked to Mark Sweeney about, and trying to find the fall line, which has helped me. Like, where is the line that is going to be a straight line to the hole? If you walk around the hole and see where the ball is just going to go very straight to go into the hole, which is also complicated for a lot of people. So I guess what you want to remind people, and the thing that helped me the most in the very beginning with reading the putts, was thinking about gravity. I mean, greens are designed to not be flat because water's got to roll off of it. Well,
that's right.
What is the direction the water's going to go? Use gravity and try to make the line that way.
Right. And then that's actually the 12th chapter. It's called, you know, going with the flow. if you were to, if the green was cement, if you will, and you poured a bucket of water, where would the water flow? The water flows with the hill or with gravity, and that's where the ball is going to go. So that's a very helpful tool, I think, for a lot of folks that say, you know, I don't know how to read the green. And that kind of puts it in perspective for them.
Obviously,
another one that I like.
I got to say that obviously the editor got a hold of the book after you wrote it, because number 12 is actually called How to See the Break, not Go with the Flow.
Well, it's How to See the Break and Go with the Flow.
There you go. And that's exactly what you just did. Very nice recovery, sir.
Yeah, you bet.
And what were you about to say? I'm sorry for interrupting. What were you going to say?
No, it's another tool that we like to use on how to read the greens, and it's mentioned in the book as well. It's just, you know, you imagine you're looking at, you're on the bank of a river, and the water's flowing obviously in one direction. If you were to throw a leaf in there into the river, the leaf would go with the flow of the water. So same type of thing. If you were to hit a putt, it would go with the flow of the water, and that helps people, again, visualize and see the break and go with the flow.
Go with the flow. Dude, you're from Hawaii. Got to give the sign.
That's it.
All right, I'm going to bounce to another chapter, and this is actually relevant to a round I was playing yesterday. A friend and I, and it was an incredibly hot day, and I like this course. I like walking this course that I was playing Foxtail North up in Rohnert Park, but it's like a 6.5-7 mile walk. It's a really long walk, fairly flat, so I don't have a problem with that. But that long of a walk in 90 plus degree heat, I really wasn't in the mood for walking because we were entertaining that day. So a friend and I were in a golf cart, and the two other people that were with us, one got matched with us, and this guy was walking carrying his bag, and then the third guy was a newbie. Someone who really knew to the point where he didn't know that you can't grind your club in a bunker, that you don't walk. I mean, there was a lot of the new stuff that I was had to, you know, give him some instruction. I said, do you mind if I share something? No, please help me. All right. First of all, if you're going to talk to the guy, you can't stand there and talk. You got to keep moving. pick up the pace. Let's go. Huh? So by the end of the round, so these two guys, the walking guy and the newbie, were really slow, and it was driving us crazy. And when we were done with the round, my playing partner was getting so frustrated. He was like, He just gave up. He says, you know what, I'm feeling rushed all the time because these people behind us are on our butts and we can't get these guys to move faster. And he was so frustrated, he just said, stop scoring for me. I don't care anymore. And when we were done with the round, it took us 4 hours. And we were both so surprised, because I've played that course in over five because of the long walk. So your chapter, number 9, I want to give to him, how to relax when being rushed. Please, we need a tip on that one.
Well, I think that's one of the biggest frustrations for golfers, is when, you know, you look behind you and there's four people standing there, one of them with his or her hands on the hips, you know, the other waving the club, and they're just always on your tail. It's like they want to finish their round in 2 hours, and you want to enjoy your round in sub 4. So to me, that is really frustrating. And I think it's for everybody. I mean, whenever there's a group behind you, you feel like there's a tension. And so what I tell people is to be ready. Okay, when it's your turn to hit your shot, be ready. And you can rush, but rush in between your shots. So what that means is when, after you hit, you know, and you're moving as a group, you can rush all you want, okay? You can sprint if you want to between your shots, but once it's time to hit your ball, that's your time, okay? So that's when you slow down. So it's really, the chapter title is called How to Relax When Being Rushed, and the subtitle is Be Ready and Then Slow Down. So when it's your turn, have your club that you want to hit. You know, select that club ahead of time while your other playing partners are hitting. Think through your shot. And then once it's your turn, that's when you slow down to your regular pace, as if you're playing by yourself with no one else around, because that's your time. And what that's going to do is one of two things. One is it's going to get you back into playing mode, Because in between shots, you're not in playing mode. You're in being on the golf course mode. When it's time to hit your shot, you slow down, you get into your pace and rhythm, even though you're being rushed from behind, and you make a great shot. And that's going to save time more than anything else. A lot of times people, it might have happened to your buddy, is you're rushing to stay ahead of the group behind you. You're rushing in between shots, and then you rush your shot, and then what happens? You don't hit a great shot. Then you have to do it all over again, and so you add shots to your round, which then slows the game more than anything else. So I tell people, be ready when it's your turn to hit. Have your club selected, and then once it's your turn, that's your time. You honor it. You slow down to your regular pace as if there's no one else on the golf course to make your best shot, and then you're playing great golf. And I think that's the advice that I would give to any golfer out there, whether they be a PGA pro playing in a tournament, and they're on the clock, rush in between your shots. But once it's time to hit your shot, you go back into your regular pace.
As one of the things I learned from one of the very first episodes of Golf Smarter, which is walk fast, swing slow.
There you go.
Okay. I want to go to number 23. This is all on part one still. 23, how to play business golf. What do you mean?
Well, you often hear that there's no better golf than business golf. But for a lot of people, though, that's not the case, because business golf is when you're going out with a purpose other than just playing golf. If you're going out with your buddies on the weekend, it's to play golf and have a good time. Business golf usually means that you're taking out a client, maybe you're playing with your boss, you're playing with another colleague, and there's a purpose other than just playing golf. And for a lot of folks, that is very hard for them to juggle between the two. They see it as something that they stress out at. So either one of two things happens for them. Either they play terrible golf because they're just so focused on, trying to manage the business side of the event, or vice versa. They play great golf, but then they totally forget about, the business side. So what I tell people is you need to be able to flip the switch when you're playing business golf. So flipping the switch means that there's two different things happening out there. One is you're there for a purpose of, for business of some sort. And the other purpose is golf. So I tell people to create two different separate events. Event one is playing golf. Event two is the business sort of interaction that you have. And when it's your turn to hit your shot, you think, okay, event one, I'm playing golf. You move into golf mode. You strike the ball. And after you strike the ball, then you switch back to event two, business, which is, talking about whatever you may be talking about with your playing partners. And just by having that, that switch, if you will, to turn it on and off, allows you to realize what mode you're in. And it frees you up so that you can separate the two while they're happening out there. And for a lot of folks, they get stuck in between. Is this business? Is this golf? Is this business? Is this golf? And then that's what they get. They kind of get that mediocre reaction and mediocre results. So by switching it to on and off, on just for event one, golf, on for event two, business, and vice versa, that allows them the freedom to actually do one or the other at the same time. And what they'll find is that they'll play great golf, and the business will take care of itself.
Yeah, but be careful. If you're going out with a potential client or a potential boss, you don't necessarily want to play great golf, right? You want to play to their level of golf, right?
Well, it's funny because, that's another one. I'll have to write a whole other book on that one. How to play well, but not too well.
Yeah, exactly. How to hold back. Actually, as everybody is well aware, golf exposes character in so many ways that you don't see in normal life. How a person handles themselves in situations. And one of the best pieces of advice I've ever received about the business golf aspect is that you don't do business on the course. you learn if you want to do business with that person while on the course. And then you see, do they swear? Do they throw their club? Do they take things in stride? Do they cheat?
Right?
These are things you really need to know before you go into a business situation with somebody. So then if you've decided, okay, this guy's all right, I think that we could work together, then you do the business in the 19th hole. And sitting down and having, whether you're having some iced tea or you're having a beer or you're having mixed drinks, sitting down at a round of golf with people after the round is so interesting how you get people to open up quickly. Wow.
Yeah, and it's fun. This is for all the folks that have been reluctant to take up the game of golf and because they're fearful of embarrassment or so forth, not being as good as their fellow colleagues. But what we teach people is that it doesn't have to be that way. You can separate it into two separate events when you're playing quote-unquote business golf. And I call it event one golf and event two business. So when it's time to hit your shot, that's event one. Focus on playing the best golf, hitting the best shot possible. Once you hit your shot, the shot's done, then you go back to event two, which is business. And then you can go back to just, you know, talking with your client or with your boss about whatever may be the topic at hand. And that way it separates the two. You don't feel like you have to mesh it. You can separate actually playing some pretty good golf and having fun and separate that and still have a good business event while you're on the golf course.
All right, let's go over to part two. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's move to part two. Now we're talking about your play on the course. And again, this is all from the Frustrated Golfer's Handbook, which is available in the Golfer's Mart. Number 30, how to sink putts from any distance. Yeah, right.
Well, it's funny because this is the part of the game where I tell people that technically you can make a shot from any distance, technically.
Not if you're trying.
That's the problem. That's the problem. You try too hard, then you kind of start putting walls up. So even if you have a 100-foot putt, technically the ball could go in the hole. So that realm, that possibility is what people need to keep, you know, that inkling of possibility is what people need to be open to. And one of the most important things that, you know, and I work with people on this all the time is, you know, I often ask them before they hit a putt, you know, what do you want? And I get the funniest answers. A lot of people say, well, I just want to, you know, hit it in that direction. Or they'll say, I don't want a three putt, or I just want to get it within 10 feet of the hole or 5 feet of the hole or 3 feet of the hole. I go, why don't you just want to get the ball in the hole? That's the whole point of the game, right? Isn't that a thrill? They go, and then they think about it and they go, yeah, I want to get the ball in the hole. So that's what we start with, is like, you can make any putt from any distance. And that's the big revelation that I want people to understand or experience, just the possibility that you can make any putt from any distance. So this exercise starts with that premise. And this mental golf trick, and it's how to sink putts from any distance, and it's what I call the spiral exercise. So a lot of times when I see people warm up for a round, they hit a few balls, or they'll just go to the putting green, and sometimes they'll drop the ball and they'll be, you know, 50 feet from the hole and they'll start whacking putts. And I say, if you want to build the confidence that you want when you're on the golf course, start small. Okay. So start your first putt from about 6 inches. Okay. And step up and knock that ball in the hole. Then with this exercise, you're going to spiral your way out. So you're going to move it out to a foot, but move it over to the side. Okay. So you're going to be making sort of like a conch shell, making a nautilus shell, if you will, around the hole. So you'll hit one from a foot, and then you'll move it out to a foot and a half, moving around the hole, then to 2 feet, 2.5. And you'll find that by doing this exercise, by starting with a 6-inch putt and then working your way up gradually, before you'll know it, you'll be hitting putts from any distance. And this is an excellent, excellent exercise to, number one, build your confidence, but realize that you can strike a putt from any distance and do well. This is also a great exercise for those people. And when I say those people, I mean everybody, every golfer, is that everybody has what we call that, for lack of a better term, the burp zone, that zone of putts in which we have some type of mental hurdle. So for a lot of people, it's that 4 to 6 foot range. Anything inside 4 feet, they can just go ahead and step up and they feel pretty confident. Anything beyond that 6 foot range, you know, they hit. And I think what why they have this burp zone, if you will, is it has to do with expectations. So for a lot of people, anything inside 4 feet, they're like, yeah, that's close enough. I know I can make that. And then anything beyond 6 feet, they say, well, I'm just going to go for it because there's really no – it could go in, it could not. But then at 4 to 6, they start to get, you know, kind of hazy. They're like, I should make this. I should be making this. And they get a little tense and a little nervous. So this spiral exercise by just going in sixth-inch increments around the hole will shatter that little burp zone of yours. So try it out there. I know a lot of people will experience that on the golf course. Try this on the putting green, and you'll see how amazing it is for you to hit putts from, again, any distance. So when you see this sink putts from any distance, I mean, I don't mean just long distances. I mean also in that little burp zone as well.
Okay.
And that is really powerful for the low to mid handicapper that experiences that a few times every round of golf.
Okay, now I got it. I'm not going to go on to chapter 48, how to go from range to course. We just did a whole episode with Ken Doherty on that. But I, you know, talking about going from the range to the course and on hitting every putt from any distance, I did something this weekend that I've never done before that worked very well for me. And the testimony of that is this round that I played the other day, I had 30 putts in a round and I was very happy. That's a really good round of putting for me.
Right.
And I shot an 84, but the round before that I shot an 88 and I had 40 putts. And I was really upset with myself. There was too many three putts going on and you know, no one putts, no up and downs. Before this round that I had the 30 putts, I was on the putting green warming up before the round. And my playing partner came over and I said, and he took a couple and I said, all right, you know what? It's so hard to really focus on what it feels like to putt here on the putting green when you got four balls. So here's what I want to do. Putting on the putting green, there's always pressure to try to get it in. So let's add some pressure. So let's just pick a hole. We each get three balls. You shoot, I'll shoot, you shoot. But make a competition out of it. Put some pressure on it on the practice putting green, and boy, did that translate to for me on the course.
Well, it's one of those. It's one of the exercises. Practice the way you want to play.
Yeah.
Yeah, practice the way you want to play. So a lot of times you'll see folks, you know, on the driving range, they'll grab, you know, that big mega bucket of 150 balls, and they'll just start whacking away like a machine gun, and I'm like, you know, how often do you get to hit balls on the golf course like that?
Right.
Never, right?
Right?
So I say every now and then, you know, there's times for doing drills and working on different skills. Step back behind a ball on the driving range and imagine you're on the golf course. Put yourself, you know, in your frame of mind as if you're on the golf course and go through your pre-shot ritual and strike that ball as if you're playing. Same thing on the putting green. Say, you know, the biggest thing that you hear these little kids, you know, they say, you know, they talk themselves as if they're in a situation. Here I am on the 72nd hole at the Augusta National. You know, it's the whole Bill Murray thing, right?
Yeah, you know.
But there is a certain element of putting yourself in those situations. And you know, I think if you ask every great athlete, the top athletes of all time, if you interview them in any sport, you say, you know, what did you do as a kid everyone will probably have a story of like, I imagine myself, I was the broadcaster explaining, you know, creating the situation, and they put themselves in the situation, you know, 5 seconds left on the clock, down by two, going down, dribbling down to the corner, hit, putting up the, you know, the three pointer as the buzzer is going off, swish, you know, you put yourself in those situations, and that's it. Yeah, exactly. The crowd goes wild. Same thing in golf. So creating those situations on the putting green when you're with a buddy, you can, you know, play, you know, match, just like you said, hit three balls, put a little pressure, you bet against yourself. And that kind of helps you experience what you would experience on the golf course before getting out there. And that's one of the things that I think a lot of people do that throws them off, is they don't get in those situations prior or in practice. And so they're experiencing it for the first time on the golf course. So what you talked about there with your buddy is perfect. It kind of sets you up to actually practice the way you want to play, and it gives you the tools to do it.
So how can you actually get away with writing a chapter called How to Shoot Your Best Score? You know, it's like, oh, today was my best score. I didn't even realize it until I looked at my scorecard, because if I look at my scorecard, I'll never hit my best score.
Well, it's funny because, you know, How to Shoot Your Best Score is all about being in the moment for each and every shot. And I think that's really powerful. And how you do it is a lot of times that best score is already there. You know, it's the old adage. I had a teacher once. We all showed up the first day, and she said, "Okay, everybody here right now has an A. Everyone has 100, right? And everyone starts that way, and now it's your goal to keep it, right? And that's what I tell people when they play golf, is think about that best round you've ever played. Think about that best hole you've played, or that playing a really good hole, or hitting that great shot. You've already done it. You have that in your hip pocket. Okay? It's now just allowing it to happen again. Because if you did it once, that to me shows that you're capable of doing it again. So how to shoot your best round is realizing that you can already do it, and you've already done it. So that one is number 49, I believe it is, and it's like the go to sleep. And that's what I talked about earlier today, is that if you're playing around the next day when you go to bed the night before, imagine that you've already shot that great round that you're capable of shooting. So visualization is all it is simply imagining yourself doing something. So imagine yourself on the first tee, if it's a course you've played, if it's your home course or you're familiar with it, getting on that first tee, teeing it up, seeing where you want that ball to end up, hitting that perfect drive, and then going to where your ball ends up, grabbing that 8-iron and hitting that perfect shot right to the green and making the putt. So go through each and every shot one by one in your mind. And what it does is you realize that, yeah, I can do this. I can hit good shots. I can play great golf. And it's already there. I just need to go out and let myself do it. And that's what I mean by how to get, shoot your best score.
Well, playing with confidence. I found to be the greatest thing for any round of golf. If you're playing with confidence, and what Jim Waldron calls positive indifference, it's like if you put pressure on it, you're confident, but if you put pressure on it, it's not going to go in. It's those shots when you're just like, oh, I don't care anymore. And of course it drops in. So the positive, but the confidence is huge in the sport.
And I think it's confidence in that. Because sometimes it's one of those things where you show up the golf course one day and for whatever reason, your muscles, your coordination, it's not firing on all cylinders, okay? Maybe you just didn't have a great night's sleep. Maybe you're sore from, working out a couple days ago. Or maybe just, it's one of those days things just aren't in sync. But you can go out there with the right mental frame. Like you said, confidence in your game, that is what keeps you going until everything starts to ignite. So a lot of times when you're playing golf, you might be kind of just puttering along, no pun intended there, and you're not striking the ball too well, you're not scoring great, but knowing that you're capable of, in any moment, everything switching with one swing is a huge, huge confidence builder. So again, let's say you're playing on a Saturday and you're really excited about your round. You've done all you want to do. You visualize, you did the practice, you're really pumped up, but you're just not scoring or you're not hitting the ball as well as you'd like. Have the confidence to realize that with just one shot, and it could be the next shot, it could all change. because 18 holes over a four-hour period, you know, one shot is just one shot. You're going to have a lot of opportunity. So be confident in that and trust your game that, and be patient, and it will come. And if you have that patience, and I think that's what a lot of the seasoned players on tour, you know, they have that patience that if they're not striking the ball great and they're not scoring great, that if they stay with their game plan, it will all fall into place eventually. And that's the one; those are the ones that succeed. And the same thing goes for the weekend golfer. If you can just know that with that one swing, that it could be the next one, you could change everything just like that, snap of a finger. That's enough to keep people coming back, I think, and staying on their game plan.
You mentioned that when you start with a new student, you ask them what they want to accomplish. What are the answers that you generally get?
Oh, within the game or within a shot?
For a new student, when you ask them, what is it that you want to accomplish by taking a lesson with me?
Yeah.
You probably hear the same answers over and over, I'm sure.
Well, a lot of people, it depends on their level of play. If they're a beginner and they've just started, a lot of them just want to feel confidence. You know, you've talked about confidence. Mm-hmm. They want to feel that they can go up there and enjoy the game and feel comfortable in what they're doing. So for them, what we do for pure beginners, we teach them that.
How do you burst their bubble to say, yeah, sorry, it ain't going to happen?
Well, I think, you know, acknowledging what you want is half the battle, because a lot of people don't know what they want and they're just kind of floating about. And I'm not talking about just golf and just life in general. So if someone says, you know, they come to me and I ask them that question and they have an answer, then I know they're halfway there because they have an idea of where they want to go. So if they say, you know, I just want to feel comfortable out there. I want to go out and play with friends and not embarrass myself. I want to be able to go out and play, you know, those tournaments at work and have a good time and not feel nervous and so forth. I tell those folks that you already own your game. And this is the big thing, is that you own your swing, and no swings are no two swings in the world are alike. So the key to you enjoying this game for, you know, and developing the confidence is to realize that. Is that this is your game. This is how you experience it. And that is half the ball. It sets the tone. So people oftentimes when they take a lesson in whatever, they often look to the coach, instructor, to tell them what to do. And our philosophy is different. We don't tell you what to do. We are there to guide you. We see ourselves as coaches, and what great coaches do is they bring out the potential in their players or in their students. They don't tell them what to do per se. They just bring out their potential. And that's what our goal is. And when I say potential, it means what are you capable of achieving? And finding the way that gets you from where you are now, your level to that is all about giving you that motivation, the belief that you can achieve it. And to realize that this is your game, this is your experience when you're out there. So you get to create what you want to create. And so we don't get fundamental in terms of telling you exactly how to do things. It's all about creating what works best for you. And I oftentimes bring up, you know, certain individuals out there with swings that are unorthodox, quote unquote. If you look at the, you know, if you put hook people up to a computer, you know, Jim Furyk, you go back to Arnold Palmer, you know, a lot of these swings are not quote unquote technically sound, but they work for the individual. So I tell people, find your swing that fits you, own the game, and you're going to have fun with this for the rest of your life. So that's one of the questions that I often get from beginners, from the lower handicaps or more established players that are, you know, stuck at their kind of that barrier, that 190, 80, 70 barrier. They ask me, you know, I really want to get, you know, what do you want? And they say, well, I want to break through those barriers. And a lot of times those are mental barriers. Mm-hmm. And so what I tell people is that don't think about it as I'm going to break through the 70 or the 80 or the 90 mark. Just focus on what your end goal is. And your end goal is to play spectacular golf, to have fun out there, to hit great shots. And then the scores will take care of themselves. I think when people get hung up, you know, they maybe have that great front nine, they're, you know, and they go, oh, I'm going to do it. And then they start to self-sabotage.
Mm-hmm.
And how many times have we all done that? You know, not just in golf, but in life. It's like we get in a momentum and we're going, and then we say, uh-oh, wait a minute, this is not supposed to be happening, right? So I tell people, just focus on, you know, the goal in mind is there. It's always there to shoot that personal best score. But a lot of people shoot that best score when they're not thinking about the score. They're just going, they're hitting great shots. And, you know, Rory at the British Open,
the Open Championship.
Talk about an inner peace, right? He wasn't even thinking about score. He was just enjoying his time out there, and everything was falling apart. And a lot of the great golfers, when they play those great rounds or great tournaments, talk about that rather than how they're striking the ball.
Well, no, everything was falling into place, not falling apart.
Yeah, that's right, into place.
Yeah, exactly, yes. Exactly. No, I was thinking that most people, and it brought me to chapter 26, is that most people would come to you and say, I want more distance. And
yeah, there's this obsession with distance, and I think it's funny because whether you hit a shot 280 yards or you hit a putt 2 inches, it still counts as one stroke. So
yep.
It doesn't matter how you end up with the strokes on your scorecard, you know, they're all the same. So I tell people that if you want distance, and distance is a part of the game, no doubt, you know, you need to get from, you know, A to B, and often sometimes it's, you know, 400, 500 yards, now 600 yard long holes. So how to get more distance is by establishing a really strong foundation. And it relates to the balance that we talked about earlier today. But I tell people that a lot of times they think, oh, to get more distance, I have to swing harder. And sometimes when you swing harder, you don't get the same connection with the ball. And so you can swing as hard as you want. You can get maximum club head speed for you. But if you hit the toe of the club, you know, the ball, you know, with the toe of the club, it's not going to go where you want it to go, and certainly not going to have the distance you want. So all I tell people is that instead of trying to swing a certain way or do anything other that, you know, that tightens you up or tenses you up, I just tell people, you know, simple thing, batter up. And if you're familiar with baseball or softball, whenever you watch a batter go to the plate, you see them really establishing a really strong foundation. You see them kind of kicking their feet into the dirt, digging in, really getting a strong foundation, and that sets the stage for them to make a good swing. So I tell people when they're setting up, imagine as you're setting up to your shot, if you're right-handed, you know, planting that right foot in the ground like a batter in a batter's box. And really getting that strong foundation, and vice versa for a lefty, planting in that left foot. And just by doing that, you're establishing a really strong foundation, a very strong set, if you will, set point, where you're really strong from the waist down. And that will generate a lot of power for you. Another example is why do we need that, people ask. Well, if you didn't use your lower body and you just swung, you know, with your upper body. And try this sometimes where you just set from your waist down, don't move your body, and just swing with your upper body. You'll realize, wow, I don't really have a whole lot of momentum going here. I don't really have a whole lot of power, if you will, if you're just using your arms. Where most of your power emanates is from the lower part of your body. And so that foundation is everything. It goes back to, you know, the house is only as strong as its foundation. Same thing for the golf swing. So if you want to get more distance, don't worry about swinging harder or anything like that. Just establish that stronger foundation by imagining your batter in the batter's box. And it has a really powerful effect just by doing that.
Awesome. All right, well, we've gone through 11 chapters of the 50-chapter book, and again, it's The Frustrated Golfer's Handbook by Darren G. And I need to ask you to wrap up this one. I can't imagine how big your golf balls are to make a statement, an invitation like this. Chapter number 5, How to Shoot a Hole-in-One. Really? You're really going to give advice on how to shoot a hole in one?
Yeah.
It's like so totally lucky.
Isn't that what we all want, right?
Yeah,
get
but
the
it's
ball
so,
in the hole.
It's so random. A hole. Yeah, but I'm talking a hole in one from tee to the hole, not just hitting the putt. So explain yourself, sir. What do you mean by chapter number five, how to make a hole in, how to shoot a hole in one?
Well, I think a lot of folks, it's really two things that we're looking at. Is it goes back to the realm of what's possible and what you're capable of doing. And so number one is to realize that, yes, you can shoot a hole in one. Okay, a lot of people say, oh, I'll never, I can't make that putt, I can't make that shot. I go, there is a possibility when you step up to the tee on a par three that you can shoot a hole in one. So that's number one, is to realize that, yes, I can do it. And, you know, I bring up my uncle. He has, I think, 13 holes in one.
Oh, my gosh.
And, yeah, he might be on 14 by now. So if you're out there, let me know if you've hit number 14. He's probably playing golf right now. I asked him, I said, what do you do? He goes, well, you know, this is a lot of luck. But I don't think that's true, because what makes my uncle so successful, I think, in life and in golf, is that when he steps up to the ball, and I've played with him, I've watched him, there's a certain level of focus that he believes that he could get the ball in the hole. I mean, you could see it in him, in his body language and how he looks at the hole. I mean, he's not just stepping up there and swinging. A lot of times we step up there and go, I just want to hit, I just want to get good contact, I just want to swing. He actually says, I believe he says to himself, when I look at him, the way his body language speaks is, this ball is going to go in the hole. So that's part of it right there. And then how do you actually do it? So it goes from the realm of, yes, I could make a hole in one, to how's it going to happen? So what you do is what I call shrinking the green. Okay. And you look at a green, it's a big, big space that you could land the ball in. And a lot of times people say, I just want to get it on the green. I tell them, let's get more specific. Okay. Shrinking that green means that they move the flag to different parts of a putting green, if you will, or of a green on a golf course. So wherever that pin is, wherever the hole is located, I want you to shrink the green so that it is a relative part of the game. So that means the area surrounding that hole. Okay. And if you were just, I'll give you a more simple example. Let's say you're playing to a green that is basically, you know, circle, and the flag is in the back left of the green. I would tell people to take a pen, if you will, and draw a little cross on that green, to making four quadrants, if you will. And that pin happens to be in the upper left quadrant when you're looking at the hole. I want you to shrink the green as if it's just that quadrant, okay? And what that does is it takes your focus from being a very wide area to a more specific area, the area around the hole. And with practice, that area can get smaller and smaller until you're focusing on a very small part of the green, eventually, even if you're really good at this, and with practice, just the hole. And if you talk to, you know, again, a lot of the pro players, a lot of the single-digit handicaps, that's what they're doing when they're out there. When they're talking to their caddies, they're not talking about hitting the green. They're talking about the specific areas that they want to land that ball. And they're creating quadrants, and some are actually making even smaller spots. So when I say how to shoot a hole in one, what I'm talking about is shrinking your green from a wide area of possibilities to a more focused area of where that ball could go. And what that does is it allows you to really start to emphasize in your mind, as well as when you're hitting your shots, is getting the ball where you ultimately want it to go, and that's in the hole. And I want everyone who shoots the hole in one, after listening to this, to email me and let me know, because I'm trying to keep track of who's doing it and who's not.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, and write to me. I'd love to hear about your – I mean, I have people writing to me all the time reporting on how their game's going. But, yeah, you get a hole in one, definitely want to hear about it. Definitely want to hear about it. Well, Darren, it's been great to have you back on the show. Again, if for Golf Smarter members who want to hear more about your writing and your teaching, episode number 84, and then a two-parter, episode number 223 and 224. Those are from 2010, and the other one was 2007. But it is great to have you back on the show. Really enjoyed it.
It's been wonderful, Fred.
And
I look forward to seeing... I look forward to seeing you and all the listeners out here on the Big Island, August 4th, 2015. We'll meet at our two locations here on the Big Island, one at the Mauna Kea Resort, another at the Big Island Country Club. And that's where we'll do the 500th episode of Golf Smarter. Looking forward to it.
Okay, that would be cool, don't you think? Actually, I'd love to plan a weekend golf outing early in summer 2015. Are you interested? Hawaii? Somewhere else, perhaps? You know, we've done this before. We did a Golf Smarter adventure in Prague. We've done a Golf Smarter adventure in Scottsdale just after the Phoenix Open. Got to play the course the week after the Open and had all the grandstands still up. We had so much fun. We've played up in Lake Tahoe, and we've also, right after the President's Cup in San Francisco, we did an outing with a group of us. We even had Jesse Ortiz there to do a golf demo and an interview. And each of these trips, we do interviews, and you get to participate. So let me know. I think it would be a blast. I want to hear from you on this one. So send me an email and tell me where you want to go and when. All three of Darren's books, The Frustrated Golfer's Handbook, The Seven Principles of Golf, Mastering the Mental Game on and Off the Golf Course, and the third one, The Seven Personalities of Golf, Discover Your Inner Golfer to Play Your Best Game, are all available in ebook, paperback, or hardback versions in the featured book section of our Golfer's Mart. Thanks again for your purchase. You know that there is more to Golf Smarter than just this podcast. We have Golf Smarter Tips, Golf Smarter TV, our conversation on Facebook and Twitter at Golf Smarter, hashtag sound advice. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions on where we should meet for a golfing outing, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.